From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life.
I'm Pete Stoughton.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Whether your mental or physical wellness brings you to the top of the highest peaks,
or you need a little help with the climb,
The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch.
Well, Pete, have you ever done something stupid,
yes.
dangerous,
yes.
or self-sabotaging?
Yes.
But here's the catch. Just to get one over on someone else.
Yes.
Never. Well, okay. Many of us, as flawed as we are, have experienced this following instance of spite, which is the topic that we'll be talking about in the next half. We're driving along and someone starts to tailgate us. And then, as a measure of spite, we either maybe slow down or even tap our brakes. Our next guest is neuropsychologist and professor at Trinity College Dublin, Simon McCarthy Jones, who will tell us that there's actually an upside to this typically unattractive behavior. So he says that when we prioritize the punishment of bad behavior over our own immediate self-interests, it is a fundamental way that we and all animals promote good behavior. How about that? He's written a new book about this human instinct we know as spite. The book is also called Spite. It's the upside of the dark side. Simon McCarthy Jones joins us. Welcome, Simon, to The Mountain Life.
Hi, Lynn. Hi, Pete.
Well, what a relief that there is an upside of spite, but it also makes me wonder if it justifies this typically, as we said, unattractive behavior.
It's hard to say because the dark side is pretty dark with spite. So whether it outweighs it or not, I don't know. But I think once we know more about it, we can choose how we can control it, give the power back to ourselves rather than that little hand in our back or the devil on our shoulder. And we can choose kind of how we want to behave, knowing what spite can lead to.
What was the genesis for you studying this? And you've studied many different areas of both neuropsychology and game theory and all of these different disciplines to come up with what the underlying cause is of us wanting to invoke our spite on someone else.
Yeah, that's a good question. The past is frankly a fog to me. I always think back to this study that was done with socks where folks were asked to come into a lab and five socks were laid out in front of them from left to right. And people were asked which was the nicest sock. And it turns out that for everybody who said that the sock on the far left was the nicest, four folks said that the sock on the right was the nicest. And it turns out that the socks were actually all the same. Yet when you asked people, why did you prefer the sock on the right? They said, oh, it's a much nicer sock. It's nicer weave, nicer fabric. So people didn't know why they were doing what they're doing. And frankly, I'm not quite sure why I wrote this book on spite. But once I did start writing it, it turns out that it seems to be a really powerful force. So it's probably a bit early to be quoting Star Wars, but I think we need to know the power of our dark side because it really is quite a powerful force.
It's never too early to quote Star Wars. And since you did that, I love how you started the book and you really bring the spite out of our society and highlight it really well. And you ask these questions because you believe that spite permeates everyday experience. And you say, you know, have you ever just waited a little bit at that parking spot just to make that person behind you wait for your spot just a little bit because they're rushing you? Or have you ever voted for a politician just because you didn't like the other one? Or have you ever messed up, you know, your mom or dad says that you don't go out looking messy and you actually make it worse. I think all of us, as you go through that list, we're like, yep, 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 yep. And so do you, after writing this book, actually still believe that spite permeates all of our everyday interactions?
I think it's one of those things where when you start looking for it or you start asking people about it, people say, actually, yes, I have done that. And so, again, it's like red cars. Once you start looking for red cars, you see red cars everywhere. And again, whether it's looking at domestic life, how people act in business, 2016 in particular seems to have been a vintage year for spite on both sides of the pond. So, again, you can see it everywhere once you start looking for it.
And I think that's just as in your quote with Star Wars, you have to really understand the darkness to understand the light. And as we think of it, you know, we think about in our marriages, in our friendships, in our enemies, and at work life, there's been times where we've not been the best of ourselves. And we tend to say those were our worst moments, when I was the most spiteful. And you want us not to stay in that spot. You want us to actually grow from that. Is that correct?
I think it's about learning about these forces inside us and then choosing to control them. So there's a nice quote from Aristotle where he says about anger, that the thing about anger is it's not that we shouldn't get angry, it's that we should get angry at the right things in the right way for the right time. So I think that there can be a useful role for spite, but it's just managing it. So, for example, I mean, if somebody tells you that you can't do something, then, you know, you can react against that. You can feel like your freedom's been impinged, and you think, right, I'm gonna show you. And that can be a really strong motivator. You know, I listened to your show with Vanessa O'Brien. I mean, that, which was remarkable. Obviously, I don't know what drives her, but again, if somebody said to me, you know, I can't climb that mountain, then there'd be a little demon on my shoulder saying, actually, I'm going to show you that I can, and I can use that as motivation to really push me forward. So it's managing it, not pushing me to do things that wouldn't be useful or profitable, but using that force inside us and kind of harnessing it to try and achieve what you want to achieve, rather than just letting it drive you blindly.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, our guest is Simon McCarthy-Jones. His new book is called Spite, The Upside of Your Dark Side. And at least one of the covers, Simon, that I've seen has a very large middle finger sticking up, which is kind of a hilarious cover. But I'm wondering if you could distinguish between what is spite and what is just rebellious behavior. Because very often when someone tells me I can't do something, I want to do it, it's not out of spite, but it's that feeling of, well, maybe even rebelliousness isn't the word I'm looking for. Help us out with that.
Sure. So spite would be kind of formally seen as being something where I act in a way which causes you some kind of harm, but also, at least in the short term, harms myself as well. So even if it's undertaking like a risky behavior, even if there's a risk in it to me where I might fail, that can still be detrimental. So I guess on that side, one of my favorite stories comes from Italy in the 50s, where you have a chap called Ferruccio, and he makes tractors, and he's very good at making tractors because he has a good year, and he can buy a Ferrari for himself, and he buys one for his wife as well, very considerately. Anyway, he keeps breaking the clutch. I don't know whether it's because he's used to driving tractors or what, but he keeps breaking his Ferrari's clutch, sends it back to the garage, gets repaired, comes back, he keeps breaking it, and it's pretty expensive being a Ferrari. Anyway, he finally breaks it again, and he gets his own tractor mechanic to look at the clutch, and it turns out it's quite similar to the clutch used in his tractors, which are actually quite cheap to make, and he's pretty annoyed. He goes over to see Enzo Ferrari, and they have words, and there's a big falling out, and he decides he's going to start his own sports car company just out of spite. I mean, so he's going to try and damage Ferrari's interests, potentially, and he's taking a big risk. I mean, starting a sports car company, maybe even if you're Elon Musk, that's a pretty risky business. In his case, it turns out quite well, because Ferruccio's surname was Lamborghini, and that went quite well for him. But again, he risked a lot, potentially, just to try and harm somebody else. It turned out well for him, but again, it's trying to manage that backlash and that response where we're looking to try to get back at people.
So that is the upside in the case of Mr. Lamborghini, right? That he did something out of spite, but it turns out to be a very positive thing. And that is different than the person who decides to tap their brakes because someone is tailgating them and the car behind them tailgating smashes into their rear bumper.
Yes, that's clearly not quite as lucrative. But in terms of the benefits of spite, I mean, there's quite a wide range. So first, there's lots of social brownie points, potentially. So let's say that the Pete was not nice to me, for example. I'm sure you wouldn't be Pete. But if you were, and I were to retaliate, then people might see me as vengeful, but they wouldn't see me as being kind of a nice person. Whereas if Pete was perhaps, and I know you wouldn't be, if you had words with Lynn and I jumped in to defend Lynn, potentially risking your vengeance too, Pete, then society would give me points. I'd be seen as being a trustworthy person, a helpful person, someone to cooperate with because I'd helped out somebody when I didn't really have a dog in the race. So there's real social brownie points if you could aim spite to kind of punish other people at a risk to yourself. So that's kind of one area. And you might want to speculate, you can maybe see quite a lot of that on social media. Spite also seems to have benefits for competitiveness. So there was one study I came across where folks were asked to add up some numbers and try and solve as many problems as they could in a given period of time. And then there was another round where they were told there was a prize on offer for the person who could solve the most problems. And it turns out that everybody got better on the task once there was a prize in the game, but the spiteful people improved twice as much as the people who weren't spiteful. So it seems to be because the spiteful person isn't afraid of being ahead and somehow wants to dominate. And that seems, in a competitive environment at least, to have some potential benefits for them, if not for everybody else.
I think what made your book kind of unique for Lynn and I was, I'd heard the competitive aspects, but there was this underlying need for fairness and justice and equity that I hadn't thought of, that never really came into my purview. And you really highlight that. Help us to understand, because that's not typically what we would normally associate with spite.
Yeah. So a lot of spite, you can understand it as kind of forcing other people to behave more fairly. So if somebody is behaving unfairly towards you, you can see the spite response as being a way to force them to value you at your worth. So if you are going to retaliate in some way, make a cost on that other person, potentially they're going to behave better in the future. And there's been some nice kind of game theory work looking at this, where they show that once you have spiteful people enter into a population, then it really helps fairness thrive, because if someone's being fair to you and you try and spite them, well, you haven't gained any advantage over them. You've just both lost. So it really encourages fair behavior, because fairness is a way to combat spite, because if you're being fair and you get spited, then everyone loses and no one benefits. So it seems to be that there's maybe a role the spite in our evolutionary past in encouraging us to all behave more fairly.
And spite kind of manifests as the antecedent behavior, the one that's really obvious, but what you're really looking at is the underlying motivation. And as I think about that with children, colleagues, Lynn, other friends and family, that actually does resonate, that there is a sense of, well, it wasn't fair that person cut me off, or they weren't following the rules, or, I can think of my children and their friends. Well, they didn't do the same for me that I would have done for them. And so then it really helps calibrate those conversations afterwards. Is that correct?
Absolutely, yeah. The only issue is that it starts to look like it's involved in fairness, but you look a little bit closer and little fissures and cracks start to appear. And it starts to turn out, when you do experiments which control for a range of factors, the fact that you might be kind of displaying your virtue to other people, if you look closely, it starts to look like spite is on the surface about fairness, and we justify our spiteful behaviors by saying we're just trying to be fair. It starts to look like spite is really underneath that fairness, really about us trying to dominate other people in a sense as well. So it can promote fairness, but it seems to be, when you get into the nitty-gritty, a lot more about dominance and trying to get ourselves ahead rather than actually aiming at fairness. And fairness is kind of the cover story that we put over spite. So spite is really it's a bit of a wolf in sheep's clothing, potentially.
When you talk, Simon, about how all animals invoke spite, I think about my dog, who will not really eat his food or even drink his water until another dog comes around. And then over the weekend, we were camping with another dog, and my dog was guarding his water and would only eat and drink because of that. Now that's spite. Or is it in the animal kingdom, is it just about domination?
It's always slightly hard to tell, but I mean, that could potentially just almost be about self-interest. So there's quite a fine line between what's self-interest and what's being selfish, and then what's being spiteful. So it's always kind of hard to tell. So if you look at what the primatologists say, the primatologists seem to think that there might be spite in our cousins who are chimps and bonobos, but the psychologists seem to think that chimps and bonobos aren't really spiteful, and spite might be slightly unique to humans, and that if you set up the same kind of studies that you do in humans but you do it with monkeys and you have bananas on the table rather than money, then you don't seem to see chimps being too spiteful as compared to the glorious species that we are.
Glorious in all our glory. You tell a lot of stories in your book, a lot of anecdotes in which people have used spite to have a one-upsmanship or get over some emotional hurdle, like the guy who erects a huge, speaking of the middle finger, a huge sculpture in, is it his ex-wife's, who got the home in the yard. That just does not seem like productive behavior to me.
It seems like something which could have been a positive force for us, maybe going slightly astray and doing more harm than good, certainly in that case. So in that story, so you have somebody who believes that his ex-wife has shacked up with somebody who is having a relationship during their marriage still. And so, as you say, he buys a 12-foot-high bronze statue which goes in the back garden, pointing at across to his ex-wife's house, and even buys a spotlight so that the finger can be seen at all hours of the day. And on the surface, it seems quite funny, but then you start to think, you know, if you were that woman, it probably wasn't funny at all. It was probably quite scary. So, yeah, it's I'd say that'd probably be an unproductive use of spite.
I've heard some interesting, spiteful Vendevers. I'm sure there's a few that kind of stand out to you as far as like the most hilarious examples of spite, such as that. Is there one that really kind of stands out in your mind as a hilarious example of spite?
It's just because there's always somebody on the receiving end.
Right. Forget them. It's us as an audience that want to hear this.
So I tend to like it in literature more, just because again there's nobody's life on the line there. So I love Captain Ahab in Moby Dick. I think that's just a fantastic character. I mean, he kind of displays what I'd call like awful label existential spite. So he says that don't speak to me of blasphemy, man. I'd strike the sun if it insulted me. He's got that level of spite. He's prepared to spite. He's not just kind of people, but nature. So the spiteful instinct we have, which seems to be there to manage relationships between ourselves, gets turned onto a whale, gets turned onto the sun. So it's that spite gets turned, comes almost onto the laws of nature, which again, you could question how profitable that might be.
Yeah, he definitely didn't win at the end there. What do you recommend, you know, as you've done all this research, as we're working with someone who is a very spiteful person and does want to dominate their environment and others, is there any advice that you'd give us in working with individuals like that, the Captain Ahabs in our life?
Yeah, well, I guess because a lot of spite would have its roles in perceived fairness, it's maybe trying to help the person understand what is going on in terms of fairness. So, I mean, from your own point of view, if you find spiteful behavior kind of on your horizon that you think you might perpetrate it, a lot of it in terms of restraining yourself is to do with anger management. So it's doing things like taking a time out. All the experimental games show that if somebody is treated unfairly and then there's a pause before they react, they act less spitefully. Similarly, if you can get people to maybe rethink what they think the intentions of the other person are, and to think, well, the other person might have acted this way for this reason, that reason, and another reason, rather than leaping straight off to the kind of the worst interpretation, you find that again makes people act less spitefully. So again, if somebody is behaving spitefully towards you, you can explain to them potentially why your behavior was fair. You can state what your actual intentions were in case there's a misunderstanding. I mean, it might be the case that the person you're dealing with is just a fairly nasty piece of work. I mean, I think the reason that a spiteful person is potentially terrifying is because, you know, if someone's being nasty to you normally, you can appeal to their self-interest. You can say, look, you're acting towards me in this way, but it's costing you. You're losing out too. But, you know, a spiteful person's a bit like a Terminator in a sense. You know, they can't be bargained with. They can't be reasoned with, you know, and they won't stop ever until, well, not until you're dead, obviously, but until at least you're impaired in some way. So it can be quite hard to reason with people if they're acting out of spite, and it's not due to fairness. It's just due to their desire to to potentially dominate you.
Mm. You talk about this game called the ultimatum game, where one person is given a sum of money and then told to split it with a second person. And you talk about how this game reveals how easily, at least people in the Western tradition, turn to spite. Can you explain this?
Yeah, sure. So in that game, you come into the lab and you're told there's someone in the next room and they've been given $10 and they've been asked to share some of it with you. And maybe you get a note through the door saying that they're going to give you $2 out of the 10 and they'll potentially pocket the 8. And that gives you two choices. You can either say, yes, I'll take my $2 and walk away. And that's $2 you can spend on a coffee or whatever, if you can buy coffee for $2 these days. But your other choice is to say, look, no, I don't want it. And if you say, no, I don't want it, you lose your $2 and the other person also loses the money that they get too. They lose their $8. So potentially you both lose and you've acted spitefully. And you tend to find that maybe around half of people, if they're offered like $2 or below, will say, no, I'd rather have nothing and you have nothing than accept this unfairness. And again, you might say, well, it's only $2. What about real life? Yeah, it turns out that if you play the game with $100 on the line, you're potentially being offered $30, which is, you know, that's a good chunk of money. People will still turn down that offer very often. So even when there's quite a lot of money on the table, people will still ostensibly promote fairness over their own self-interest.
Mm. Well, interesting. How does this play into the proliferation of greed? Greed is just endemic, it seems, in this country. And probably in yours, too.
Yes, I think it's a fairly universal thing. Again, because of our evolutionary heritage, and there do seem to be two... We don't have time to go into this, but we do seem to have two sides to our nature. If you look at hunter-gatherer societies, we seem to have quite an egalitarian nature in those settings because one person can't dominate, and the tribe will basically stop anyone dominating and keep everybody down to the same level, and you get quite an egalitarian structure. Obviously, in our societies, where they're obviously much bigger, our dominant side, our hierarchical side, Jordan Peterson and his lobsters, that side kind of comes through more. And for evolutionary reasons, we display this positional bias. So very often, if someone's given a choice between them earning 100 grand a year and their neighbour earning 90 grand a year, so that's actually one option. The other option then will be for you to earn a bit more, 110 grand, but now for your neighbour to earn more than you. So they earn 120 grand. So what would you prefer? Would you prefer to earn a bit more, but your neighbour's ahead of you? Or would you prefer to earn a bit less and you're ahead of your neighbour? And you find that a lot of people will prefer to earn a bit less as long as they're still ahead of their neighbour. So the more competitive the world is, the more inequality, the more we potentially are concerned with kind of our social position, which again doesn't kind of bring out necessarily the best side in us.
And living in here in a mountain town, we see that often, you know, with the Joneses building a bigger home across the street or driving a nicer car or faster on a bike. What do you recommend that we can do? You know, should we just pull our neighbor over and be like, you can't buy that because it'll make me feel bad?
What should we do? I don't know. Well, there's been some nice study done with Buddhist meditators where they get the Buddhist meditators to play these ultimatum games, and they're given offers which we'd all see as being pretty unfair and we'd reject, and they tend to accept those offers more, and they're grateful for the $2 that they've got. And again, this has been done in the neuro imaging scanners. And it turns out that if you look at what's going on in their brains, they seem to be focused more on the current moment, less on kind of... There's less activation in memory areas, suggesting they're not reaching back into their past for times they might have been treated unjustly. That's speculation. But they seem to be more focused on the current moment, on the current gain that's in their path, and they seem to kind of to be grateful for what they have. And there's a nice concept I found within Buddhism called wrathful compassion, where it's about not lashing out with anger to kind of protect yourself or to justify your own self-righteousness, but it's more about maybe trying to react maybe like a parent might do who's angry at a child. Obviously, you're trying to just improve the child's behavior, not to try and punish the child themselves. It's the behavior rather than the person that you're trying to change. So I'm still trying to work out what the Buddhists mean by this, but this idea of wrathful compassion, where it's an act that's coming from love rather than trying to harm the other person, there seems to be something in that.
Yeah, it seems complex because even the explanation of it as a wrathful compassion just... it causes conflict in my brain. So I guess we need to spend some more time with Buddhists and the existential understanding. So thank you so much. We look forward to diving more into your book, and we would encourage others to spend time understanding spite and their own spite. Thank you, Simon.
Pleasure. Great to talk.
Thank you, Simon. Again, the book is Spite, The Upside of Your Dark Side, and our guest, Simon McCarthy Jones. I like the wrathful compassion. It's sort of synonymous. You know, we talk about tough love.
Right.
Wrathful. It's a new thing. You know, we're always looking for these new things to
phrases,
tell our kids.
Right?
New phrases. Oh, I'm just practicing some wrathful compassion on you, son. Love it. Well, thanks again, Simon.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Mountain Life.
If you enjoyed the show, make sure you subscribe, rate us, and leave us a comment.
If you have an idea for a future show, email us at mountainlife@kpcw.org.
We hope you'll bring your green smoothie and join us next week for The Mountain Life.